Then Huth caught a glimpse of a grimy video billboard suspended from the ceiling, and the live picture of himself that was being projected to the crowds. When he saw what he was towing through the streets, he froze in disbelief.
What the hell?
It was a guided missile, more than 100 feet long. The startling image reminded him of a vid he'd seen as a graduate student. It had shown a single ant struggling to carry an impossibly huge beetle carcass back to the nest. That vid had to have been at least 25 years old when he viewed it. The last ant and beetle had long since departed this reality. As Dr. Huth stood there immobile, gasping for breath, some of the mob dipped into the latrine buckets they'd brought along and splattered him with handfuls of bloody excrement.
Oh, shit!
Evidence of yet another scientific failure to solve the global food crisis. The ingenious Whitecoats of Five had genetically tailored a bacterium whose internal processes could turn igneous rock into something edible. But when the pseudo-fast food product was consumed regularly, its mineral components built up in the human body, giving rise to a range of alarming physical symptoms, including bloody stools and psychopathic behavior. Despite the known side effects, Five dispensed beefy cheesies and teeter cheesies by the truckload to placate the gloomtowners. The discarded plastifoil wrappers swirled ankle-deep around the mob's feet. A fresh hail of stones cut Dr. Huth's cheeks, forehead, and neck. He knew he had to keep moving or be stoned to death. His long legs quaking from the effort, he broke the missile's inertia, but managed just a few more steps before collapsing under the weight of the nose cone. The cone pinned him to the street, crushing the air from his lungs and making him pass out. Merciful oblivion lasted only a heartbeat.
Who?
Dr. Huth suddenly awoke, his burden gone. He flew upward in a metal mesh cage, his wrists shackled together with 2 feet of chain. Looking up from his manacles, he realized he hadn't completely escaped the missile. It now stood upright, its riveted skin gliding past him in a white blur as the elevator rose.
Where the hell am I?
He quickly sensed he wasn't alone in the cage. He whipped around and came face to face with a human from the parallel world, the man he'd ordered brought back to Earth for examination and interrogation. This was the same tall, rangy savage who'd somehow managed to escape not just Five's custody, but its reality as well, and in so doing, had created untold havoc and destruction.
No, not you.
The one-eyed man stared back at him with malice. A scar from a knife slash, like a crudely drawn lightning bolt, divided his left brow and cheek above and below the black eye patch he wore. Black curling hair fell almost to his shoulders. A leather sheath strapped above his left boot carried a huge knife. In his right hand, he held an equally massive chrome wrench. Though he called himself Ryan Cotter, Five's media consultants had renamed him Shadow Man and turned him into a symbol of hope for the starving masses. His birthplace on the parallel Earth was Deathlands, the heavily nuked former United States of America.
Why have you come back here?
Behind Cotter, a half dozen children, filthy, hollow-eyed, swollen-bellied, clung like monkeys to the outside of the rising elevator cage. Huth ignored their bony little outstretched hands.
Where are you taking me?
Shadow Man didn't answer. He held something inside his mouth, a round shape that bulged against the dark stubble of his cheek. When the gantry elevator stopped, once again Dr. Huth faced the missile's tip. He was relieved to see that there was no door in the side of the nose cone, and therefore no possible way he could be placed inside. Shadow Man spun him, and with a forearm crushing against the front of his throat, pinned his back to the nose cone.
Come on, Shadow Man. We can work this out.
Cotter then grabbed the manacle chain and jerked it up, forcing Huth's arms above his head. Though the scientist struggled, the one-eyed man easily controlled him. Cotter fitted a bolt through a chain link, threaded it into a matching hole in the nose cone, and using the chromed wrench, quickly torqued it down. Cotter suddenly retreated a step.
Why are you doing this to me?
Shadow Man smiled and curled back his lips. Between his front teeth, he held a human eyeball with a sky-blue iris. Its color and size perfectly matched his good right eye. Dr. Huth had had that eye genetically reconfigured to fit him, a replacement for the one Cotter had lost to a knife slash years ago. The gift had been intended as an awe-inspiring demonstration of the biotechnological power of this reality, and of how cooperation with Five was rewarded.
What are you doing?
Carter swiftly lunged forward, slamming a forearm back across Huth's windpipe. Shadow Man took the severed eyeball from his own mouth and shoved it between Dr. Huth's teeth. His lips clamped shut by a calloused palm, Huth could do nothing but whimper as the savage wound turns of duct tape around his head, sealing the eyeball inside. While the scientist tried not to strangle on the mouthful, the monkey children rattled the cage's mesh, mocking his predicament by inflating their cheeks with air and bulging and crossing their eyes. From the foot of the gantry, the rhythmic chanting of the Gloomtowners resumed. Shaking and pushing the structure, the mob rolled the gantry away from the missile. Huth's feet slipped off the edge of the platform's floor, and his full weight dropped onto his upraised wrists. As the scientist dangled from the nose cone, as the gantry continued to retreat from the launch pad, the elevator started its rapid descent. Brian Carter and the monkey children dropped from view, abandoning the scientist to his fate. What he now realized was a 22nd century version of crucifixion. He was being punished for his contributions to a better way of life, to freedom from hunger and illness, the eternal banes of humankind. He'd offered his world the salvation of science, and in return... The rumbling grew louder and louder, and as it did, the vibration set his guts shimmying and made the trapped eyeball quiver between his tongue and the roof of his mouth. With a blast of flesh-melting heat and the deafening bellow of wide-open rocket motors, the missile leapt upward. The jolt of liftoff caused the eye to slip back into his throat, blocking his airway. Huff had no choice. He gulped it down whole. As the missile climbed and climbed, engines roaring, his body buffeted against the missile. His arms felt as if they were about to tear free of his shoulder sockets, and the swallowed eye rolled around in the pit of his belly like a cannonball. Dr. Huth awakened on his hands and knees. Violent spasms seemed to start from the soles of his feet, rippling through all the muscles of his body, building a terrible momentum that peaked as they reached his throat. He dry heaved over and over. Long strands of bile trailed from his lips into the powdery red dirt beneath his face. When the convulsions finally subsided, he slumped onto his side. Disoriented and confused, Huth clung like a drowning man to his only clear memory. Moments ago, he'd been in the Totality Concepts Friends Reality Laboratory. He'd been there when the missile he'd already sent across to Shadow World, a missile meant to put a recon satellite in orbit, had nosed instead back to his Earth, back through the shimmering lips of the passageway, its gigantic rocket motors thundering. How that singular horror had come to pass, he had no way of knowing, but certainly the goal of firing the missile back through the corridor had been to destroy the connection between parallel worlds. Given the fuel capacity of the missile and the fuel's volatility, there was every reason to expect the strategy had worked. Huth had a much less distinct recollection of being sucked through the reality portal and the backwash from the rocket's exhaust, like a dry leaf caught in a whirlwind. That memory was jumbled with a nightmare of horrible punishment and death. Thinking about it made his mind wheel violently, so he forced himself to stop and pushed up on an elbow. He was surrounded by an open space that stretched unbroken to the horizon in all directions. The sudden absence of physical boundaries, of human-scale walls and ceilings, filled him with heart-pounding panic, but he resisted the urge to bury his head under his arms. Above him, the dome of the cloudless sky was still tinged with the rose pink of dawn. The sparkling air felt strangely light in his lungs, and so dry it tickled inside his nostrils. He sat near the edge of a broad, flat table of rock the color of dried blood, elevated above the surrounding plain by several hundred feet. The mobile missile gantry was nowhere in sight. Also missing were the five explorers who'd preceded him through the passage. If this was Deathlands, and he had no reason to doubt that it was, he'd been deposited in a different spot, perhaps near the original landing site.